I'm Dan Carell with DCA Card Links, and this is Commerce Code, a bi-weekly digital commerce podcast for leaders in card linking, loyalty and digital marketing, mobile wallets and payments, and financial data. Thanks for joining this running conversation with leaders in the industry. And if this podcast is helpful to you, come join us at a DCA Card Links event. You can learn more at www.digcomall.org. This week on Commerce Code, I'm talking with Keith Smith, the CEO of Payouts Network. Payouts Network's PayNow platform executes instant payouts, digital credits, and pay with points. And as the name suggests, PayNow executes immediately. Today, Keith and I are talking about points as programmable currency. Points as currency is a topic I've found interesting for a long time. We've lived in a long period in which people, I'd say Americans especially, never really questioned or even thought about much what currency is, how it works, or whether it might change. A big picture view suggests that currency can be lots of things, and it's not ridiculous to think that the next step in currency evolution could come out of the points, rewards, or loyalty landscape. So this is that conversation, but you probably noticed that the title is Points as Programmable Currency. Now, that's fascinating. Commerce Code listeners are a sophisticated bunch in the points and payments space, so I think each of you can probably imagine different ways a currency could be programmable and how that might work. It's a big idea, and like so much these days, it's happening now. So stay tuned for Points as Programmable Currency, a conversation with Keith Smith, CEO of Payouts Network. Commerce Code is brought to you in part by VantageScore. 8 of the top 10 banks and over 3,400 leading banks and fintechs use VantageScore to predict and manage repayment risk. Learn more about the latest advances in credit scoring and how to grow your lending business by leveraging financial inclusion at VantageScore.com. Keith, welcome to Commerce Code. Great to have you here on the show.
Yeah, good morning, Dan. Great to be here. Appreciate you giving me the opportunity.
Absolutely. No, it's great to have you on. Well, so it's June as we sit here and record this. I think it'll probably drop in July. And you and I talked at a DCA conference a while ago about the fact that you live in Bozeman, Montana. And I think of Montana as being like paradise in the summer. But to be totally honest, I've never been there in the summer. So I like, are you outside doing wonderful? Do you fly fishing? I mean, is there a river run through it? Is it amazing? Like, what are you doing this summer?
Yeah, fly fishing and pretty much a lot of time on the water, you know, riding horses and playing golf. But it's a tough life.
That's awesome. That is terrific. So good. Well, look, we're, I would say like not in spite of that, but like the thing that funds that delightful sounding lifestyle is, you know, the great work that you do at Payouts. And so I want to talk with you about points as programmable currency. And, you know, I said up top that I've always found points as currency to be really interesting and that there's something interesting and important about programmable currency. So let's just maybe lay out the idea of points as currency to begin with, and then we can sort of get into the programmable part. From your perspective, where do we stand on the evolution of points or rewards into a sort of a fungible currency?
It's a fascinating topic and one that I think people have tried to solve for years, Dan. And, you know, part of the, I think where we sit in this is that loyalty obviously is key to every business that comes to mind, right? And engagement and being able to acquire it and then protect it and monetize it. And I think that where we sit today is there's so many programs out there that I think there is a stat that the average consumer today participates in like 18 different loyalty programs. And, you know, they really only engage in about half of them and, you know, or utilize half of them. And so I think that we're trying to figure out how this points or whatever the token is, right? People are earning. How do we really help consumers to monetize that to take loyalty to the next level? So I think today, you know, we sit in an environment where it's a little bit stagnant and tiresome, and there's not really a new way, but we've moved through this age of personalization, through this age of self-serve, through this, you know, global economy. But today we're still very restricted when it comes to the points we earn. And I think a lot of that's driven because of the lack of technology, right? It's hard for the program managers to really help take this to the next level. And that's what we're focused on at Payouts Network when it comes to, you know, turning points into the next currency.
It is remarkable. We see this in so many ways. And I guess our mental model of change often is over 20 years or whatever, some period of time, a certain amount of change takes place. And we kind of imagine it to have been incremental. Sometimes it is, right? I mean, Apple releases a new iPhone every so often and it gets a little bit better each time. But in most cases, it goes through long periods of being kind of the same. And then there's a rush of change all at once. And, you know, I think I'm right when I think of loyalty and rewards programs as being kind of like that. In many ways, they've been really the same for a long time. So, you know, from your perspective, what's the next thing that kind of needs to happen to make, you know, to move things forward? So, for example, to make open redemptions more fluid, less restricted, you know, is it basically fixing point of sale or integration bottlenecks or is it something else?
Yeah, so I think it's a couple of things. One is definitely the point of sale. Right? How do you do this without having to have the merchant update their point of sale, right? How do you bypass or prevent having to retrain the employees at the point of sale, right? And you know, there's only so much real estate at a point of sale, right? So there are only so many issuers or so many programs are going to get integrated. It's like on the iPhone, even though iPhone supports layers and layers and layers of apps, the point of sale is not that sophisticated or capable or that efficient, right? It costs for these retailers to do that. So one, I think point of sale. I think the second part is being able to deliver a piece of technology or set of technology that allows the issuers or the program managers to be able to customize or modify these programs in real time and personalize them, right? And so is it seasonal or is it cardholder base, right? And so are you dealing with, you know, pay cards or are you dealing with a Premier card, a, you know, co-brand frequent flyer card? Or are you dealing with card designed around travel or high spend, right? Or is it everyday spend, right? And where are you trying to engage that consumer? And I think that point of sale is a challenge. And then I think the other challenge is there's not a usable piece of technology out there today that allows these issuers and program managers to really help customize their program to monetize or maximize the value for them and for the cardholder. And so, you know, to feed the whole ecosystem. And that's what another one that, you know, we're focused on doing with our platform and our rules engine is being able to deliver that and solve the point of sale problem. But I think those are the two, Dan, I think those are the two big hurdles.
Absolutely. You know, and I think it's again on things not changing and then changing all of a sudden, you know, the point of sale, you know, the credit card swipe or you know, the experience that you had as a consumer at the point of sale was the same from when I was a teenager until a minute ago, you know, and it has gotten so much noticeably better. Right. I think the experience and has gotten so much noticeably better. So consumers who knew nothing about it would be able to tell that like change is afoot, which is healthy. And that's good. So the benefits to consumers of all the stuff you're talking about are pretty clear to me. But I'm interested in, you know, your take then on the benefits to merchants, to brands, to others. Like how does open redemption help them? Who does it sort of help the most?
I think it helps across the entire ecosystem or category of cardholders. And I'll give you an example, Dan, or a couple of examples. If you happen to be issuing a pay card, and the average pay card, depending on what stat you look, you know, has a life of 9 months to 16 months. And if the average cardholder in the pay card environment doesn't engage within, you know, 7 or 10 days, the propensity to, you know, become dormant or dead card is very, very high. And so being able to engage that cardholder to incent them to spend is super important. So that's one example, right, where you've got this period of time to capture. And then take a traditional credit card or debit card issued out there and an issuer is spending, you know, $150 or $250 to acquire that customer and trying to get them to use that card in real time from the time they receive it to get them activated. You know, today it's like spend $1,000 and you get 10,000 points or spend $500, right? And the average consumer is not going to go spend $500 on their card in a week. Right. And in an everyday spend, right, to get those points. And then the other challenge is once they have those points, how do they value them? And so is it that I'm going to bank them and I'm going to use them in a year because I'm going to get an airline ticket or something like that? Or can I use them real time and get real value out of them that's going to impact, maybe increase my personal wallet, right? It's going to increase what's in my checking account, right? And it's going to have a material impact. The third one I would tell you is these co-brands or preferred cards or, you know, people that have earned certain status with these issuers have had a different behavior. They don't necessarily want the same reward. They want a different reward, or the issuer needs to treat them differently. And so we have in preferred cards, you have special help desk numbers that you call so you don't get caught in the, you know, I got an 8-hour wait time, right? I got a preferred line that I'm going to. And so why is it that I have my points, but I can only use them a certain way, or I only get rewarded in a certain way? So I think personalization back to the cardholder, and maybe to that cohort of cardholders. So I think that the value reaches across all spectrums of card issuing. I'd even reach a little further, Dan, to say it doesn't have to be a card. It could be, you know, digital wallet, right? It could be neobank, right? It could be, you know, Wave and Pay. So it's really around the token or the account being issued. And you look at marketplaces out there, kind of the same challenge, right? How do I get people to engage in my marketplace? Because I'm going to have a wallet, same situation. So card, wallet, I think the value is there for the whole industry, right? And all scopes of consumers.
Yeah, I think all of that sort of anticipates, or at least I can tell that the ways I can imagine, and I want to hear you talk about it because you actually know, and I'm just imagining, but like the ways that this leads to programmable currency. And so let's talk about that. So what do you mean by programmable currency from your perspective? How do you do it? And like, what's the use case right now? Because I can imagine that that may evolve in the future, but like at the moment, how do you think about that?
So I go back to Payouts Network. We view payments, every payment is not the same. And so when we look at loyalty points and the redemption of loyalty and turning it into a currency, it is a transaction-based model and mentality. And so this is, I'm at the point of sale, I'm paying for my goods, and I have an opportunity to redeem points for cash, essentially, against that purchase in real time. And I get to decide. But the programmatic aspect of the currency is starts with the issuer, right? And what is the issuer really wanting to do for Dan Correll? What is this issuer really wanting to do for Keith Smith? Because we may look the same, but we may behave differently, you know, from a card perspective or the card we have, right? And so, you know, a pay card provider may say, hey, I want everyday spend to where it's gas and grocery and coffee, and it's, you know, it's not micro ticket, but it's small ticket purchases, right? It's $10, it's $15, it's $20, right? And so being able to say, hey, the points are available and you can use those, and we have the ability to control it to where they're only good for purchases of a certain size, or they're only good at purchases at certain mids, right? Or category codes, or it's seasonal. Right, from that perspective, it really starts back to the issuer and what that issuer is really wanting to achieve, either monetarily, seasonal interchange, or engagement, personalization. They think that this cardholder base wants more of an experience, right? So you are more of a foodie and you want a food experience, and I'm more of a wine and I want a wine experience. When we say programmatic, that's what we're talking about, is being able to do that and not have the challenge of point of sale. And the other part, Dan, I think that's super important is being able to run the future of loyalty on a national basis, national retailer to the small mom and pop, hyper-local. Like here in Montana, it's a beautiful place to live. There's not a lot of people. Maybe that's why it's so beautiful to some of us, but there's the little coffee shop. It's not a Starbucks on every corner. It is literally the drive-up coffee shack in the middle of a parking lot, you know, that you're going up to. Can you redeem points there? For some people in this part of the country, that's important, right? In other places, you know, people want to shop local to support, in New York City, the local merchant. And so how do you reach that? And through technology that we've built, these program operators and issuers can do that without having to touch the point of sale. Right. So I think it's super powerful. I think it's leading, you know, the future of where we're going. And there's going to be other things that influence it. But programmatic spend, you know, starting with the issuer and going down to, you know, what is the best experience for my cardholder is how we look at it.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking about one of the many different dimensions I'm sure that the programming can work on is, you know, driving urgency is just a big is a big challenge, right? It's worth more and it's worth something different if someone is going to redeem it sooner. And so I think that just strikes me as something where, and people would keep that in mind, like, hey, I got to use this by the end of June or whatever. So I got to imagine that's one of those things. But two, the ability on the platform you're talking about for people to do A/B testing, right? Like, is it better if we give them a month or is it better if we give them 3 months? And well, you could try it with, you know, you could do cohorts. You can do, you know, there's ways of figuring that stuff out on a platform as flexible as what you're talking about, which would be, you know, a lot harder to do in other environments. So I'm, Commerce Code listeners are largely insiders and have a pretty good handle on some of this stuff. And so I want to get in the weeds a bit, which is, what are the sort of technical, maybe organizational shifts that are needed in order to be able to treat, you know, points like programmable money? You know, what do organizations need to do?
So the technical lift is not that big.
Because you guys have basically done it.
That's right. Yeah, because we've done it end to end, right? And we're a white label technology, right? So we drop in the consumer brand and do the integration. And then the change that has to happen is really around the mentality of personalization in the moment, real time, helping drive behavior, but also helping support behavior, right? And so don't force me to do something I don't already do. Help me do what I do today and reward me for doing it in one way. And so I think that's the shift that these insiders, these companies that are in the business need to think about is, how do I change my mentality? How do I take this technology and reduce waste, which is unspent points? How do I reduce waste on the cost of acquisition and dormancy, right? How do I reduce waste around ineffective communication? And so it doesn't require a new budget. It's just how you're going to allocate that budget. And how are you going to use this technology to have better insights and better analytics and be able to do your A/B testing, to your point? And, you know, if we issue out today, you know, a card, or we have the cardholder turned on and there's the ability to drive behavior in a day or in a week or in a month, and there's all kinds of partnerships out there today between issuers and retailers or service providers that, you know, being able to know when there is a slow time of the week, right? There is a slow time of the year. And how do I work collectively across the ecosystem and maybe spike the value of the point, right? So the whole ecosystem benefits from it. So I think internally for the insiders, I think it's a mental change. I don't think it's a budget requirement. I think it's reallocation of a budget and focused on better engagement and reduced waste.
So that's in the weeds, and then I'll go all the way up to the highest level. It does sound like, I don't know if you think about this as your goal. I don't know if you wake up every morning and say, hey, we're gonna redefine loyalty economics, but it feels like it could, right? If you're fully taken to its logical conclusion. And so how do you think that this will sort of impact or redefine loyalty economics from, you know, for the issuer, the merchant, the cardholder, you know, perspective? What's going to be different, you know, as this thing builds out?
Again, when I wake up and think about this, I really do think about loyalty points as a currency, right? I think about the cards that are in my wallet. How much cash do I have on me, which is very little these days? And then how many points do I have, right? And what am I going to do? And trying to get to that aspect. And previous in my career, we built mobile banking and everybody said, you're crazy. You're not going to bank on your phone. The feds aren't going to let you and all that. And then today people wake up, grab their phone, they check their balances, they move money, they pay bills. And so for me, I wake up thinking of a world where people are going to wake up and they're going to have a credit currency on their credit cards. They're going to have their cash currency, which is their debit card. And then they're going to have their loyalty point currency. And they're going to have the ability to choose and spend. And in the ecosystem today, interchange is kind of king, right? And so, but these points are going to have value. And what is the definition of interchange in, or the monetary value is going to be, I think, really well identified and easy to measure as to what I'm getting in return, you know, both as a cardholder and for the issuer and for the merchant.
Yeah. That's terrific. Well, look, this has been a great conversation. I look forward to continuing it at some point on Commerce Code in the future. And maybe at one of the DCA conferences, we'll see each other again as well. But just a pleasure to have you on the show. For anybody who's never done a Zoom call with Keith, I just want to say, like, it's like going to Montana. I mean, you can't see the background. You're listening to a podcast, but he is in Montana. And I won't even spoil it for you. You just, sometime you do a call with Keith, you talk to him and and you'll get to find out. But it's like, it's been nice. It's been like visiting Bozeman. And so, Keith, thanks a bunch for taking the time to chat with us. Any closing thoughts here on the topic before we wrap up?
You know, I think that if any of this, you know, intrigues you, give us a call. We're happy to engage with you. And, you know, it's easy to turn this technology on, you know, see if it works. Happy to share our learnings. And I don't think this is a matter, Dan, of if. It's just a matter of when, right? I mean, it's well developed, well founded. And I think it is being used today, right, in the market. So, you know, we've got the data to support it. And we really just, you know, appreciate you having us on or having me on and engaging in this. I look forward to seeing you at the next conference or on the road in the airport someplace.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much, Keith. Have a great day.
All right, you too. Thanks.
Commerce Code is sponsored by Pentadata, the all-in-one financial data API. Whether it is bank account data, credit card transaction data, or credit reports and credit scores, Pentadata has it all in one simple and easy-to-use API. With coverage of over 6,000 banks, over 200 million credit files, and 60 million merchants, you can get all the data you need for your apps at pentadatainc.com.
So that conversation with Keith about a loyalty product that really is currency reminded me of a story. Here it is. My family moved to the U.S. when I was 7. Before that, we and everyone we knew lived in Canada. And throughout my childhood, we went back to Canada once or twice a year to see people. As kids, we had a mental catalog of things that meant that we were in Canada, candy and breakfast cereals that you couldn't get in the United States, the fact that half of every product label was French, how the food at McDonald's tasted a little bit different, and you could get vinegar with the French fries. A ubiquitous restaurant called Swiss Chalet. I mean, it wasn't that great, honestly, but we thought it was a big deal. And this is the point. Canadian Tire money. What is that, you ask? If you're Canadian, you don't have to ask. Canadian Tire, first of all, is a store. They do sell tires. They sell car stuff. But they basically sell everything else, too. So like sports equipment, hardware, outdoor stuff, toys, furniture, some clothes, I think. Not groceries. Anyway, Canadian Tire gave you Canadian Tire money whenever you bought something. They were paper bills. They were more colorful, as I recall, than regular Canadian money, which is already more colorful than American money. But they were basically paper money, printed apparently on the same paper that Canadian currency was printed on, but in very small denominations. So like 5 cents, 20 cents. But you would collect that Canadian Tire money. And of course, it was redeemable at Canadian Tire for just like the face value, you know, 5 cents, 20 cents, whatever. And you'd end up with these huge piles of bills if you shopped there much. And as far as we knew, like everyone did. So, of course, it was a loyalty program. But because Canadian Tire is so ubiquitous, I mean, I won't compare it to like Walmart, but well, I mean, every Canadian town has plenty of Canadian Tire stores, one or two, and they're big. So everyone's got this stuff. And there was no reason that you couldn't just use it interchangeably with real Canadian money. So people did, to a certain extent. And other retailers occasionally would just accept it. To some extent, like to match the offer, if you will, but it's not really an offer. It's just currency. And everybody knew that it was usable. So there you are. I tell this story because it's an example of a reward that fully transcended the world of loyalty programs by just being currency. It was widely useful. It was universally known. Everybody knew what it was worth. And if the aspiration of a loyalty program is to give customers something of value that they can use anywhere, but, and this was probably the key thing with the Canadian Tire thing as well, but regularly reminds them of your brand and brings them back to you. If that's the standard, Canadian Tire money must be one of the more successful loyalty programs in history. There were just like piles of Canadian Tire money lying around every Canadian household when it was still being issued. It's not issued in paper anymore. You know, they had to evolve the whole thing. It's not what it used to be, of course. But at its peak, it was a big deal. Last thing about Canadian Tire money, it was like money. So therefore, there was someone on it. And I had to look this up. I mean, I never thought about it as a kid. But, you know, like there's the queen or there's a president or there's somebody, you know, on money. So the Canadian Tire money guy, on all the denominations, like the different bills didn't get different people. That was all the same guy. And his name was Sandy McTire. He was obviously fake. He had a giant, like, I think it was a curly mustache. And he smiled at you, which is very unlike the queen on The Real Money, who, in my recollection, was definitely not smiling at all.
Commerce Code is a bi-weekly podcast bringing you conversations with executives who are leading the way in digital commerce. If you like Commerce Code, your company should join the Digital Commerce Alliance and become part of our mission of advancing trade for good through standard setting, industry networking, conferences, and best practice sharing. Check out our website at www.digcomall.org. On behalf of DCA, have a great week.